Colin, let's get review the weekend that was at NASCAR Pinty Series. Sounded like it was an exciting finish and a close one due to some weather issues that you encountered over the weekend.
Yeah, it was, the 50th anniversary GP3R. As always, crowds were amazing. The promoter, Dominic Fugere, puts on a really amazing event. But the race, again, as always, didn't disappoint. We lost out on, I was working with Tag this weekend. But we lost all of our Saturday track time with weather. Lightning storms in the area kept us off track. The morning session was just a pure rain issue. And then around the time it came to qualify, NASCAR has a policy that when there's lightning within, 8 miles, I don't know the exact measurement, but when there's lightning within the track, we go into what's called lockdown, where absolutely no track activity happens, which unfortunately meant that we missed qualifying as well. So first time the cars were on track was Sunday for a practice session, and then we went straight to the race.
Now, when you look at some of the situations, I need you to explain how two different drivers can leave their pit boxes with a fuel can still inserted. A, is that allowed? And B, what kind of, challenge that offer for both the riders who have the fuel can inserted and the guys who are racing against them?
Definitely not allowed. You, by NASCAR rules, you're not allowed to bring any of your pit equipment outside of your pit box. There was a mandated fuel stop, and the way this works is they basically wanted to break up the race. The race isn't long enough to technically require fuel or to have to replace tires. But if we just go out on track and run laps, it also gets a little bit boring. So for this race, you were required to make your fuel stop sometime between lap 50 and lap 30. But because we don't really need the additional fuel in the cars, the rule states that you have to make contact and have a full engagement of the fuel can. You don't actually have to transfer any of the fuel. So as long as the fuel can went in and back out, you made a legitimate stop. And because the guys were so rushed, I think there was maybe a little bit of miscommunication in the pits of Kevin McCaw and Marc-Antoine Cameron. And unfortunately for them, they left with their fuel cans in. LaCroix actually made about a lap and a half before his fuel can fell out, which was crazy, but it was his fuel can coming out on track that led to a caution. And unfortunately for Mark, it put them both back in the pack. Kevin's car was a little bit better, and he managed to drive up through the field again. It took a questionable day for Mark, and definitely made it a lot worse because he ended up stuck back in traffic, and he was caught up in a five car accident right under the arch. If anyone's watched the race, there's the famous Duplessis arch, which we call Turn 3, and five cars ended up sideways through there. So yeah, totally eventful up to that point.
We got Colin Livingston on the show talking to the Cantorque Racing Report. Your group now heads out to River Race Speedway, and that's where we find you today in Antigonish, Nova Scotia. What kind of a race can you expect on this particular track?
This weekend is really neat for us. Riverside Speedway is essentially not a mirror image, but it's dimensionally perfect to Bristol Motor Speedway. So it's a 3/8 oval with really tight corners with really high banks, and it was built basically to scale to mirror the same track that NASCAR Monster Energy will be running at this weekend, Bristol Motor Speedway. What's really cool about it, I mean, every driver that comes out to this track just loves it. I mean, the hospitality here in Nova Scotia is unbelievable. The track provides great racing. It's one of our favorites because it allows side by side racing. So If you've got handling issues where your car won't necessarily want to stay on the bottom, you can try running the top. A lot of the tracks we get to when you overtake a car, like Wetaskiwin, for example, we love racing at the track. It's very, very hard to pass because there's only traction at the lower part of the corners, where to make a successful pass, you essentially have to knock a driver out of the way. And there's a technique to do it where, the driver in front will know, like, okay, you get two or three shots in the back, you're going to pull up, tuck in right behind them, and then you both carry on. Here at Riverside, we don't have to worry about that because, the track is just so raceable. You get so many options of where to run, and if your car isn't handling perfectly on the ideal part of the track, you can try extra lanes without compromising too much.
Colin, let's shift gears to F1 and a fairly significant driver shakeup with Red Bull Racing out of F1 this week.
Yeah, I mean, this didn't exactly catch me off guard. Definitely been looking at this, that Red Bull has not been really happy with the performance of Pierre Gasly, their number two driver. And Red Bull is very famous for making big moves of taking people from their junior team and moving them up. What really surprised me is that they chose to move up Alexander Albon, who's relatively new with to Formula One. This is only his rookie year, it's his second year. They have Daniel Kvyat, who has been as high as their Red Bull team. He ran with Max Verstappen. He was running beside Danny Ricciardo, and it was Max Verstappen that took his seat. That was a couple of years ago. I expected and actually predicted that they were going to move Kvyat up, but good for them. And hopefully Pierre Gasly finds his way. The big seat that people are looking at now is the number two seat within Mercedes, because Valtteri Bottas has had very good success, especially this year. He's won races. He's qualified up front. His performance has matched Lewis Hamilton. But within the Mercedes staple, they have another driver named Esteban Ocon, who is still under contract with them, was running with what was called Force India, which is now the Racing Point team that was purchased by Lawrence Stroll. And because of that, when they moved Lance in there, he lost his ride. So he's been sitting on the sidelines here for the last season and a half. And speculation is that they're either going to move him up to the second car of Mercedes, or they're going to release him just so he can resume his racing career.
Colin, let's take a look at IndyCar. And there's some partnerships that maybe clear this up for me. When you have like McLaren partnering with Schmidt Peterson, and then Schmidt Peterson switching to Chevy engines from Honda, like how does all these deals and these, a side movement, how does this all come together in the middle of a season?
Well, to refresh everyone's memory, McLaren's been dipping their toes in the water of IndyCar here for the last couple of years. Their F1 driver at the time, Fernando Alonso, ran the Indy 500 3 years ago, with Andretti Autosport and had great success. They tried again this year by just purchasing a car and trying to qualify and run the race as their own entity. And I think they realized that while the budgets are smaller and the cars aren't as technologically advanced as what a Formula One car is, it's not as easy as just putting parts and pieces together, making little adjustments, and then the car can compete. So what their move with Schmidt Peterson will do is it'll get them the technical partnership that will get them, off the ground running, and hopefully, they'll be a competitive entity, because, you don't want to see a group as big as McLaren with their name come in and struggle. What's going to be really interesting, though, is because towards the end of their relationship in Formula One with Honda, they were very, very, very outspoken about their lack of performance in Formula One, to the point that it's widely believed and widely reported that Honda will not work with McLaren anymore. And since they've ended their partnership, Honda's really started to thrive with teams like Red Bull in Formula One, where the performance has really been evident. So for McLaren to come into IndyCar, they only had the one choice of Chevy engine. Apparently the best partner for them, or the best available partner, was Schmidt-Peterson, which meant that they had to go to the Chevy engine. The side effect of all of that is James Hinchcliffe is sponsored by Honda, and he gets support from Honda Canada. So we'll have to wait and see where he ends up next year. He's put out press releases saying that he wants to continue his involvement with the team, and he wants to continue on. You know, he's basically laid out the political comment, but nobody really knows where he'll end up going forward. So definitely wish James, you know, our sole Canadian driver, the best.
And one last one for you, Colin. Let's talk karting. Bring it back a little closer. This weekend it's at Rotax Mojo Raceway in Warburg. It's the third and final of the races this year. But big implications as the senior winners in these classes can have a pretty big outcome to head off to Sarno, Italy. So where are we at with all these standings, and what kind of drama can we expect this weekend?
Well, hopefully none. I mean, for the front runners, I mean, they're front runners because they typically don't make a lot of mistakes. This is the final installment of the Western Canadian Karting Championship. They previously competed in Chilliwack, British Columbia, and then Regina. And, you know, we have this event here at home. You know, I think we cover this every week, but for people who are listening, this is going to be a big time event. Warburg is only about 45 minutes outside the city. There's free admission, and the schedule will be packed from morning to night with everyone from like kid classes, where you can see, you know, 8-10-year-olds out on the track, right through the faster shifter categories and like our DD2s and as you pointed out, Struts, there are tickets available for the world finals. So the winners of the overall series in each respective class running Rotax engines will get, you know, the ability, if they choose to take it, to compete at the world finals later on in, I believe it's October. So there's lots on the line. It's great to see. We don't get a lot of road style racing in the Edmonton area now that the Indy is gone. But I promise if people come out to the track, our newly named Rotax Mojo Raceway, you won't be disappointed. We have great grandstands. You're right on top of the action, and you'll be blown away with how fast these cars go.
Colin, enjoy your time there in Nova Scotia, and best of luck for you and the team, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Sounds good. Look forward to it.